For an individual act of will, we must consider both the motive and the motive power. The motive is a conceptual or mentally pictured factor. The motive power is the factor of willing that is conditioned directly within the human organization. The conceptual factor, or motive, is the momentary determining principle of willing. The motive power is the abiding determining principle of the individual. A motive can be a pure concept or a concept with a specific relation to perceiving, that is, a mental picture. By affecting a human individual and by determining that individual to act in a certain direction, general and individualized concepts, mental pictures, become motives of willing. Yet one and the same concept or one and the same mental picture has different effects on different individuals. The same concept or mental picture can cause different people to perform different acts. Willing, then, is not merely the result of the concept or mental picture, but also of the individual human makeup. We shall call this individual makeup, following Edward von Hartmann, the characterological disposition. The way in which concepts and mental pictures work upon someone's characterological disposition gives that person's life a specific moral or ethical stamp. Our characterological disposition is shaped by the more or less lasting content of our subjective life, in other words, by the content of our mental pictures and feelings. Whether or not a mental picture currently arising within me stimulates my willing depends on how it relates itself to the rest of my mental pictures, as well as to my idiosyncrasies of feeling. My store of mental pictures is determined, in turn, by the sum of concepts that have come into contact with percepts in the course of my individual life, that is, by the concepts that have become mental pictures. These, again, depend on my greater or lesser capacity for intuition, and on the range of my observations, that is, on the subjective and objective factors of my experiences, on my inner character, and on my life setting. My feeling life is especially important in determining my characterological disposition. Whether or not I make a particular mental picture or concept a motive for action depends upon whether it gives me joy or pain. These are the elements to be considered in an act of will. The immediate mental picture or concept becomes a motive and determines the goal or purpose of my willing. My characterological disposition determines whether or not I will direct my activity toward that goal. The mental picture of taking a walk during the next half hour determines the goal of my activity. This mental picture, however, is elevated into a motive of willing only if it encounters a suitable characterological disposition. That is, if in my life to date I have developed mental pictures of, for example, the usefulness of taking walks and the value of health, and further, if the mental picture of taking walks is linked in me with feelings of pleasure. Thus, we must distinguish between 1. The possible subjective dispositions that are suited to making specific mental pictures and concepts into motives, and 2. The possible mental pictures and concepts that are capable of influencing my characterological disposition so that an act of will results. The former represent the motive powers, the latter the goals of morality. By identifying the elements that compose an individual life, we can discover the motive powers of morality. The first level of individual life is perceiving, particularly the perceiving of the senses. In this region of individual life, perceiving is immediately, without any intervening feeling or concept, transformed into willing. The motive power under consideration here is simply called drive. Satisfaction of our lower, purely animal needs, hunger, sexual intercourse, etc., occurs in this way. The special characteristic of the life of the drives is the immediacy with which the individual percept activates our willing. This immediacy, originally belonging only to the lower sense life, can also be extended to the percepts of the higher senses. We react to the percept of some event in the external world without further reflection and without linking a special feeling to it, as occurs in conventional social behavior. We call the motive power here tact or moral taste. The more such an immediate reaction to a percept occurs, the more suited the person in question will be to act purely under the influence of tact. That is, tact becomes the characterological disposition. The second sphere of human life is feeling. Particular feelings accompany percepts of the external world. These feelings can become motive powers for action. If I see a hungry person, my compassion can form the motive power to act. Such feelings include shame, pride, sense of honor, humility, remorse, compassion, vengeance, gratitude, piety, loyalty, love, and duty. Footnote: a complete catalogue of the principles of morality from the standpoint of metaphysical realism can be found in Edward von Hartmann's Die Phänomenologie des sittlichen Bewusstseins. Finally, the third level of life is thinking and mental picturing. Through mere reflection, a mental picture or concept can become a motive for action. Mental pictures become motives because in the course of life we constantly link certain goals of our will to percepts that recur repeatedly in more or less modified form. Therefore, people who are not without experience are always aware, along with certain percepts, of mental pictures of actions they themselves have performed or seen others perform in similar cases. These mental pictures float before them as defining patterns for all later decisions. They become part of their characterological disposition. We can call this motive power of the will practical experience. Practical experience merges gradually into purely tactful action. This happens when certain typical pictures of actions have become so firmly connected in our consciousness with mental pictures of certain situations in life that we may, in any given instance, skip over all deliberation based on experience and go immediately from the percept into willing. The highest stage of individual life is conceptual thinking, without reference to a specific perceptual content. We determine the content of a concept out of the conceptual sphere through pure intuition. Such a concept initially contains no reference to specific percepts. If we enter into willing under the influence of a concept referring to a percept, that is to say, a mental picture, then it is this percept that determines our willing through the detour of conceptual thinking. If we act under the influence of intuitions, then the motive power of our action is pure thinking. Since it is customary in philosophy to designate the capacity for pure thinking as, quote-unquote, reason, we are fully justified in calling the moral driving force characteristic of this stage practical reason. The clearest account of this motive force of the will has been given by Kreyenbühl. I count his essay on the topic among the most significant creations of contemporary philosophy, particularly of ethics. Footnote: Philosophische Monatshefte, Band 18, Heft 3, 1882, available as Kreyenbühl, Ethical Spiritual Activity in Kant, translated by Harold Jürgen, Spring Valley Mercury Press. Kreyenbühl was a Swiss scholar, teacher, journalist, seeker after truth, and lecturer on Platonic philosophy. He wrote, among others, on Schiller, Plato, Pestalozzi, the Gospel of St. John, and the History of Philosophy. Kreyenbühl calls the motive power in question practical a priori, that is, an impulse to act flowing directly from my intuition. Clearly, such an impulse no longer belongs, strictly speaking, to the realm of characterological dispositions. For what is active here as the motive power is no longer something merely individual in me, but the conceptual and therefore universal content of my intuition. As soon as I recognize the justification for making this content the basis and starting point for an action, I enter into willing, regardless of whether the concept was already present in me beforehand or only entered my consciousness immediately before the action. That is, regardless of whether or not it was already present in me as disposition. An act of will is real only if a momentary impulse of action influences the characterological disposition in the form of a concept or mental picture. Such an impulse then becomes a motive of willing. The motives of morality are mental pictures and concepts. There are ethicists who also see a motive of morality in feelings. They claim, for example, that the aim of moral action is to promote the greatest possible amount of pleasure in the acting individual. But only the mental picture of pleasure, not pleasure itself, can become a motive. The mental picture of a future feeling, but not the feeling itself, can affect my characterological disposition. For the feeling itself is not present in the moment of action. Rather, it must first be produced through the action. The mental picture of one's own or another's well-being is quite properly recognized as a motive of willing. The principle of producing through one's actions the greatest amount of pleasure for oneself, that is, of attaining individual happiness, is called egoism. This individual happiness is sought either through thinking ruthlessly only of one's own welfare and striving for it even at the expense of the happiness of other individuals, pure egoism, or through promoting the good of others because one hopes for indirect advantages from their happiness, or through fear of endangering one's own interests by harming others, morality of prudence. The particular content of egoistic moral principles will depend on what mental picture we form of our own or others' happiness. We will determine the content of our egoistic striving according to what we regard as good in life: luxurious living, hope of happiness, deliverance from various evils, and so forth. The purely conceptual content of an action should be seen as a different kind of motive. Unlike the mental picture of one's own pleasure, this content relates not just to a single action, but to the derivation of an action from a system of moral principles. These moral principles can regulate ethical conduct in the form of abstract concepts, without an individual's worrying about the origin of the concepts. We then feel that our subjection to the moral concept, which hovers over our actions as a commandment, is simply a moral necessity. We leave the establishment of this necessity to whoever demands our moral subjection, that is, to whatever moral authority we recognize: the head of our family, the state, social custom, ecclesiastical authority, divine revelation. A special kind of moral principle is involved when the commandment does not announce itself to us through outer authority, but from within ourselves. We may call this moral autonomy. We then hear within ourselves the voice to which we must submit. The expression of this voice is conscience. Moral progress occurs when a person does not simply accept the commandment of an outer or inner authority as a motive for action, but rather strives to see why any given principle should work as a motive. This is to progress from an authoritarian morality to action based on ethical insight. At this level of morality, we consider the needs of a moral life and allow our actions to be determined by knowledge of them. Such deeds are: 1. The greatest possible welfare of all humanity, purely for the sake of that welfare. 2. The progress of civilization, or the moral evolution of humanity to ever greater perfection. And 3. The realization of individual moral goals that have been grasped purely intuitively. The greatest possible welfare of all humanity will naturally be formulated differently by different people. This phrase does not refer to a particular mental picture of such welfare, but to the idea that those individuals who recognize this principle strive to do whatever they think will most promote the welfare of all humanity. For those who associate a feeling of pleasure with the benefits of civilization, the progress of civilization turns out to be a special case of the moral principle of greatest possible welfare. But they will have to accept, into the bargain, the demise and destruction of many things that also contribute to the welfare of humanity. However, it is also possible that someone could see ethical necessity in the progress of civilization, quite apart from the feeling of pleasure associated with it. For such a person, then, it is a distinct moral principle in addition to the previous one. The principle of the welfare of all, like that of the progress of civilization, depends on a mental picture, that is to say, on the relationship that we make between the content of ethical ideas and particular experiences percepts. But the highest ethical principle of which we can think is that which contains no such relationship in advance, but rather springs from the source of pure intuition, and only afterwards seeks a relationship to a percept, to life. Here the determination of what is to be willed proceeds from a different source than in the previous examples. Those who honor the ethical principle of the good of all will in their actions ask first what their ideals contribute to that good. Those who adhere to the ethical principle of the progress of civilization will do the same. Yet there is a higher way that does not proceed from one definite single ethical goal in each case, but assumes a certain value to all ethical maxims, and in each case asks whether one or the other moral principle is more important. In certain circumstances I might regard promotion of cultural progress as right, and make it into the motive of my action. In others, promotion of the good of the whole, and in a third case, promotion of my own welfare. But if all other reasons determining action move to second place, then conceptual intuition itself has primary consideration. The other motives now step down from the leading position, and the ideal content of the action alone operates as its motive. We described the stage of characterological disposition that works as pure thinking, or practical reason, as the highest. We have now described conceptual intuition as the highest motive. More exact reflection soon reveals that motive power and motive coincide at this level of morality. That is, neither a previously determined characterological disposition nor an outer ethical principle taken as a standard influences our action. The action is therefore not executed robotically according to certain rules, nor is it action performed automatically in response to outer pressure, but rather it is action determined solely by its own conceptual content. Such an action presupposes the capacity for moral intuitions. Whoever lacks the capacity to experience the particular ethical principle of each individual case will also never achieve truly individual willing.